Professional writers may or may not receive critical acclaim, but they're in control of the craft, have access to their art, improve their performance over the years, and make a living from the art. A struggling writer may at times produce quality, but from day to day he cannot make his talent perform when and as he wants, doesn't progress in quality from story to story, and makes little, if any, income from his efforts. On the whole, the difference between those who succeed and those who struggle is their opposed methods of work, inside out versus outside in. The struggling writer tends to have a way of working that goes something like this. He dreams up an idea, noodles on it for a while, then rushes straight to the keyboard. He imagines and writes, writes and dreams until he reaches page 120 and stops. Then he hands out Xerox copies to friends. He gathers friends' reactions and his own thoughts to start the second draft with this strategy. How can I keep the 6 scenes that I love and that everyone else loves and somehow pretzel this film through them in a way that'll work? He imagines and writes, writes and dreams, but all the while he clings like a drowning man to his favorite scenes until a rewrite comes out the other end. So he makes copies and hands them out to friends, and then back come friends' reactions. It's different, decidedly different. But I'm so glad you kept that scene in the garage, and with the kid in his pajamas, and the car blowing up, and the love scene on the beach. Great scenes. But there's still something about that ending, and the middle, and the way it starts, that just doesn't work for me. So the writer continues to write dialogue in search of scenes, write scenes in search of story, clinging rigidly to his favorite moments until a year or more and a dozen drafts later, he quits in frustration. Writers who succeed use the reverse process. If, hypothetically and optimistically, a screenplay can be written from first idea to last draft in 6 months, this writer would typically spend the first 4 of those 6 months writing on stacks of 3x5 cards, a stack for each act, 3, 4, or more perhaps. On these stacks, the writer creates the story's step outline, 1 card per scene. As the term implies, a step outline is the story told in steps. Using 1 or 2 sentence statements, the writer simply and clearly describes what happens in each scene, how it builds and turns. On the back of each card, the writer indicates what step in the design of the story he sees this scene fulfilling, at least for the moment. Which scene set up the inciting incident? Which is the inciting incident? First act climax, perhaps a mid-act climax, second act, third, fourth, or more. He does this for central plot and subplots alike. He confines himself to a few stacks of cards for months on end for this critical reason. He wants to destroy his work. Taste and experience tell him that 90% of everything he writes, regardless of his genius, is mediocre at best. In his patient search for quality, he must create, then destroy that 90%. So he pours out 5, 10, 20 times more material than he can use. He may sketch a scene a dozen different ways before finally throwing the idea of the scene out of the outline. He may destroy sequences, whole acts. A writer secure in his talent knows there's no limit to what he can create, and so he destroys everything necessary on his quest for a gem-quality story. Finally, after weeks or months, the writer discovers the climax of the last act. With his story climax in hand, he reworks as needed backwards from it. At last, he has a complete story. Now he goes to his friends, but not asking for a day out of their lives, which is what we ask when we hand a conscientious person a screenplay. Instead, he pours a cup of coffee and asks for 10 minutes. Then he pitches his story. The writer never shows his step outline to people because it's a tool, too cryptic for anyone but the writer to follow. Instead, at this critical stage, he wants to tell or pitch his story so he can see it unfold in time, watch it play on the thoughts and feelings of another human being. He wants to look in their eyes and see the story happen there. So he pitches and studies the reactions. Is my friend hooked by the inciting incident, listening and leaning in? Or are his eyes wandering? Am I holding him as I build and turn the progressions? And when I hit the climax, do I get a strong reaction of the kind I want? Any story pitched from its step outline to an intelligent, sensitive person must be able to grasp their attention, hold their interest for 10 minutes, and pay it off by moving them to a meaningful emotional experience, just as Diabolique hooked, held, and moved you. Regardless of genre, if a story can't work in 10 minutes, how will it work in 110 minutes? It won't get any better when it gets bigger. Everything that's wrong with it in a 10-minute pitch is 10 times worse on screen. Until a majority of listeners respond with enthusiasm, there's no point in going forward. With enthusiasm doesn't mean people leap up and kiss you on both cheeks. Rather, they whisper, "Wow," and fall silent. A fine work of art, music, dance, painting, story, has the power to silence the chatter in the mind and lift us to another place. When a story, pitched from a step outline, is so strong it brings silence, no comments, no criticism, just a look of pleasure, that's a hell of a thing, and the writer's ready to move to the next stage, the treatment. To treat the step outline, the writer expands each scene from 1 or 2 sentences to a paragraph or 2 or 3 of double-spaced, present tense, moment-by-moment description. Slugline. Interior dining room day. Jack walks in and tosses his briefcase on the chair next to the table. He looks around. The room is empty. He calls her name, gets no answer. He calls it again, louder and louder. Still, no answer. As he pads to the kitchen, he sees a note on the table, picks it up, reads it. The note says that she has left him for good. He drops in the chair, head in hand, and starts to cry. In treatment, the writer indicates what characters talk about. He wants her to do this, but she refuses, for example, but never, ever writes dialogue. Instead, he creates the subtext, the true thoughts and feelings underneath what is said and done. We may think we know what our characters are thinking and feeling, but we don't know we know until we write it down. Interior dining room day. The door opens, and Jack leans on the jamb, exhausted from a day of failed and frustrating work. He looks around the room and sees that she's not around, and hopes like hell she's out. He really doesn't want to have to deal with her today. To be sure he has the house to himself, he calls her name. Gets no answer. Calls out louder and louder. Still, no answer. Good. He's finally alone. Hungry, he heads for the kitchen, but as he crosses the room, he notices a note on the dining room table. It's one of those damned annoying notes that she's always leaving around, taped to the bathroom mirror or the refrigerator or whatever. Irritated, he picks it up and tears it open. Reading it, he discovers that she's left him for good. As his legs go weak, he drops into a chair, a knot twisting his gut. His head falls into his hands, and he starts to cry. He's surprised by his outburst, pleased he can still feel some emotion. But his tears are not grief. They're the dam breaking with relief that the relationship is finally over. The 40 to 60 scenes of a typical screenplay, underlaid with a full subtext of conscious and unconscious thoughts and feelings of all characters, will produce 60, 80, 90 or more double-spaced pages. Writing a screenplay from a thorough treatment is a joy, and often runs at a clip of 5 to 10 pages per day. We now convert treatment description to screen description and add dialogue. And dialogue written at this point is invariably the finest dialogue we've ever written. Our characters have had tape over their mouths for so long, they can't wait to talk. Writing from the outside in, writing dialogue in search of scenes, writing scenes in search of story, is the least creative method. If we scratch out dialogue before we know what happens, we inevitably fall in love with our words. We loathe to play with and explore events, to discover how fascinating our characters might become, because it would mean cutting our priceless dialogue. All improvisation ceases, and our so-called rewriting is just tinkering with speeches. Writing from the outside in is not only the least creative way to work, it is also the longest way to work, because this process can go on for years before we finally realize that not all of our babies are going to walk and talk. Some of our work will be stillborn. Some ideas are simply not worth becoming a motion picture. Now, when do you want to find that out? 2 months from now or 2 years from now? If you write from the inside out, you'll realize quickly in the step outline that you can't get the story to work. Nobody likes it when pitched. In truth, you don't like it. So you toss it in the drawer. And maybe years from now you'll pick it up and solve it, but for now you go on to your next idea. Writing from the inside out, therefore, is not only the fastest way to work, but it is, of course, the most creative way to work. Working from step outline to treatment to first draft and revision, arrives at the finest possible work that your talent will allow at this point in your career. I offer this with the realization that each of us must, by trial and error, find our own method, and that some rare talents do work from the outside in and produce remarkable results. The inside-out process, however, was developed over the centuries by the vast majority of novelists and playwrights who then passed it on to the screenwriter. It's a way of working both disciplined and free, designed to encourage our finest work.